This is Structured Rambling, a podcast about ideas from literature and about literature. Episodes can focus on a single text or a theme from multiple texts. My name is Paul Sonsby. Welcome. This is an episode of Request. I didn't intend to do a review of Denis Villeneuve's new Dune movie, but I've had some people ask, given that I did do an episode on the first film, and it is an adaptation of my favorite book. But I guess I can't avoid it. And I don't want to now that I've been asked. There you go. I should mention that I actually saw Dune 2 in a theater a few weeks ago. I've mentioned quite a few times that since COVID, I never feel the need to enter a movie theater again, and I still stand by that. The cinema experience is an arrogant Hollywood trying to help claim more of our money and more of our worship. And when in reality, we can wait to see any film in the comfort of our own home theater, cinema can die, and it means little to me. If that means there'll be a smaller glut of big budget films in favor of greater art films that actually say something, hey, awesome. I am talking about a big budget film here. Yep, absolutely. But hey, it's by request, and it's based on my favorite book. I did break for my policy of not going to the movies anymore, and I went to this movie with my son, who enjoyed the first film and who wanted to enjoy an evening out with me. And the IMAX spectacle was almost worth it. Almost. Frankly, watching something in IMAX is worse than just watching anything on the big screen. You still have the irritation of standing in line and having to sit in a crowd of people with varying and suspect manners who don't know how to behave, you know, while watching something with their mouths shut. But then the screen is so huge, you actually have no idea where you should be looking. Entertainment becomes work. This can be interesting in scenes of intended spectacle, of which this film has a fair number, but most of the time it's really just annoying. And the sound is so big and overwhelming, and yet you still manage to hear that guy yapping, "What's that? Who's that? Where am I?" to the person next to him. Anyways, that sound, which for the most part functions to help Hans Zimmer's really good soundtrack, but the screen spectacle is most benefited from the big scenes, spaceships and sandworms doing spaceship and sandworm stuff. It also adds to the really cool scene on Gedi Prime, the Harkonnen homeworld, which is shot using a negative wash, making it entirely black and white. Cool, though I don't know what it accomplished. It's just something I've never seen before. Anyways, pros and cons. What stood out for me? Well, as with the first movie, most of the positives lay in the fact that this is the third adaptation of this book to film in some form. One was a TV show, but it's the first time that most of these things have succeeded. The strongest depictions of this are in Paul's visions, his ability to see possible futures, and his reluctance to be the leader, the god figure he will be to these people in the holy war that will follow. That Paul sees this and knows it to be a bad thing has never been handled very well. It's hard to handle well. Paul's victory is not good, not a good thing for the universe, and he understands us better than anyone. It's hard to depict on film a hero who's reluctant and right that he probably shouldn't be made a king. The book is hard to understand, which is why it bears out so much on the rereads. A simple story would be about a chosen one becoming like a messiah figure, but this misses the point. Paul's ability, besides being the fulfillment of a prophecy that's been planted by the Bene Gesserit, in order to make for him or someone like him, make way for them to create this the super being, but his ability is he can see multiple futures, multiple possible timelines, and he can sort of see this thread through them. This isn't exactly easy to translate to the screen, and for certain, it isn't as exciting as a Jedi or X-Men abilities. Paul can see and resists what's going to be done in his name. He's not just the reluctant hero. He's the reluctant messiah of a bloody holy war. He knows he'll cause. His reluctance is in knowing that thousands, in the book it says millions, will die in his name. Imagine, and I don't mean this sardonically nor offensively, but imagine Jesus standing over Jerusalem as it is washed in the blood of the First Crusade. Imagine Muhammad standing, or Abraham and Muhammad standing on either side of any given battlefield in Gaza today. Anyways, depressing thoughts aside, I felt the movie conveyed Paul's visions very well, considering that it's a pretty intellectual idea, which can be super hard to understand and really hard to make go in a popular film. Paul's reluctance to enter the final stages of his journey is genuine, not the typical heroic cliche. He's not just afraid to take that further step. He knows what he's bringing. And I also should recognize that Timothy Chalamet's performance of the character is good. I liked him in the first one, and I like him in the second one. Not enough time passes in this movie, I'll come to that, but still. We finally have a Paul who looks the part with an actor with the chops to pull it off. I'm not as much a fan of Zendaya's Shawnee, not as much as a knock against this young actress, but because the character was most significantly altered from the source material in an attempt to make her more interesting. So that's fair. She's far more compelling, but it also takes from her because Shawnee is supposed to be completely Fremen. When Paul takes Princess Irulan as his wife in the end, Shawnee is supposed to accept it, and Jessica, Paul's mother, ends the novel with some words about the state of concubines who will be remembered. The movie ends with Shawnee storming off in a huff. Maybe more human a reaction, but not true to the source material. Zendaya isn't a bad actress, but in this movie, she's once again really good at playing Zendaya. The other young actors are much more notable. Florence Pugh, who I think is a tremendous talent, does a fair amount with very little as Princess Irulan. She's captivating in her few scenes, very believable. The standout for me of these young actors is young Austin Butler in his turn as Fade Rautha Harkonnen. Now let's just say it's an understatement to say that this young man does a better job than Sting did in 1984. Most of what the kid has to work with, as is true for most of the cast, simply is Villeneuve's incredible vision for this film. Villeneuve is a visual director and cinematographer first and foremost. He's in fact said he doesn't really like dialogue, and it's a fairly wordy book that he's converting to film. So the direction that Austin Butler has as Fade Rautha is stand around, look crazy and intimidating, let the makeup and VFX do the rest. And he's the star of that wild negative shot sequence on Giddy Prime. But still, kid's got some acting chops. He actually, and I haven't seen the Elvis movie. I think I'm done with Baz Luhrmann. I know it won't be in any way true to, I'm done with biopics as a whole. Wow, I sound cynical today. But anyways, still, the kid's got some acting chops. He actually copies Stellan Skarsgård's voice in his role as the Baron Harkonnen to the point where Butler does this creepy character of the older Harkonnen that's so haunting. I thought they actually at times were actually dubbing in Skarsgård's voice on top of Butler's. The third impressive performance is Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica. I thought she was fine in the first film, though she never made me forget Francesca Annis from the old 1984 film. Ferguson's portrayal of Jessica is just dominant here in part two, perfectly threading the dual role of Reverend Mother, threat, and power. She rightfully steals all dominance from Javier Bardem's Stilgar, who sort of gets relegated to comic relief in the second film. The characterization of Jessica is strong, and Ferguson stands out for me, best part of the movie. It's not consistently true to the novel, and yeah, that's just another way they've altered it. It's not a big issue, but Dune 2 is generally further from the source material than Dune 1 was. Jessica is a bit of a loose cannon at times, pushing Paul harder to his destiny than I feel the book really says. This has a strange effect on the character of Aaliyah, Paul's sister, who is left out of the movie pretty much entirely. To an extent, you can understand this. She's a tough character to put out. She's a child born with an adult, multiple adults' minds. I don't know, though. I love the creepy little Alicia Witt performance in the old movie. It adds a level of strangeness to Jessica's character. In this movie, to have her walking around and dressing her unborn fetus. And what's with the weird Anya Taylor-Joy vision appearance? It's just so odd to have her playing this character that she's not going to play. Like, mind you, he made a whole first movie promising that some of these characters would reappear. Maybe he's doubling down. I don't know if you can present Aaliyah in a convincing way, and the need to focus on certain characters cost us others. The big difference from the novel here is because Jessica is pregnant for both films, for far less time passes in the films compared to the book. I don't like that Paul's rise to Muad Dib appears to happen in less than 9 months. Those are the best character performances for me, though. Javier Bardem Stilgar, as I said, becomes almost comic relief, which is a brutal change from film one. He just stands around to say it is written. He's a wild-eyed zealot. And you don't take it seriously. Josh Brolin's Gurney Halleck is Hollywood being Hollywood. I love the character, but he doesn't matter too much because Brolin brings this quality, star quality that he has and plays Josh Brolin as Gurney Halleck. But it was neat, even briefly, to finally see Gurney's Balisit played on screen, although awkwardly right before a battle. But Brolin never says the songs. I like Stellan Skarsgård's intimidation factor as Baron Harkonnen, but so many significant characters fall to nothing in favor of the visionary quality of these movies. There are no Mentats in the second film at all. They were criminally underdeveloped in the first. Peter DeVries wasn't even named, and Dr. Yui's plot against Duke Leto felt empty and flat in the first film. Same goes for film two, where the only characters developed are really Paul and Jessica, and this new, unsatisfying for me, take on Johnny. Understandable, but unsatisfying. However, the smaller amounts of stuff prevents, well, some good things. It prevents Christopher Walken from Christopher Walkening the role of the Emperor. That was the worst Christopher Walken ever, but you know what I'm trying to do. Nicolas Cage could have done it. Jim Carrey could have done it, and it still would have been relatively understated. The Fremen. Yeah, I'm not going to try. For us fans of the book, it's weird what of the narrative is dwelt upon. The Mentats, as characters, are connected to the Bene Gesserit. The reason this Butlerian jihad, and that's in the world building, it doesn't have to be mentioned, but the reason it happened is so that machines designed as people were destroyed, and so you have this next stage in evolution. And the Mentats, are these human computers, are just blinked in the first movie and nothing in the second. The explanation of the House Atomics, which take a barely 10 lines in the novel, is bizarrely drawn upon as this big moment. We've got 92 nukes. The Fremen are separated into the Zealots of the South and the sort of free thinkers of the North. But then when a sandworm is ridden, or a sandcrawler or spice or spaceship take up the whole screen, you just, you know, shut your brain off and let go. It's neat. It looks cool. It's my favorite book, and I'm pretty glad they made a viewable series of films about it. No movie can fully do any book justice, and this book is nigh on unfilmable. I'll continue to enjoy both in isolation of each other, books and films separate. If Villeneuve follows through and tries to do Dune Messiah, which is not a very exciting book, and Children of Dune, which is quite exciting. Neat, but I don't know. More than anything, I've watched these films and gone, these look really cool, and they don't come even close to doing justice. It's just that hard to convey a good book on film. And so you have to be satisfied with the difference. And the difference is big. Villeneuve, la différence. I want to thank you for listening today. And if you enjoyed my podcast, please feel free to give me a rating and review. Episodes come out at the beginning and middle of pretty much every month. Have a great day.